All right. Well, thank you, Michelle, and welcome to the Renewal Enterprise District, or the RED, board meeting of April 3rd, 2023. It's good to see everyone. Just to note that this is a hybrid meeting. So we're in person and online as well. Want to call a meeting to order. I'm going to ask my colleagues to approve the agenda today.
So moved.
Second.
Is there any, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Hearing no objections, unanimous by all present. And with that, we'll have the roll call. I'm going to flip those, but we'll do the roll call. We're all present, I think. Do you need to officially do that, Michelle?
I'll do it just in case I officially need to do it. Councilmember Alvarez?
Present.
Supervisor Corsi?
Here.
Vice Chair Fleming?
Here.
Chair Rabbit?
Here. And welcome. To everyone, especially to Councilmember Alvarez, who's attending his first RED board meeting, in such that now we're going to move on to the administration of oath. So I'm going to, Michelle's going to administer the oath of office to Councilmember Alvarez.
I'll go ahead and share my screen so members of public can see the oath. Computer's going slow. Apologize.
All right. I, Eddie Alvarez.
I, Eddie Alvarez,
do solemnly swear, that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California,
the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
That I take this obligation freely. Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. And that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which I'm about to enter. Welcome to the Renewal Enterprise.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome aboard. Glad to have you. And do you want to address the body or have a few words?
I'll make it short and sweet. On Sebastopol Road, I see great projects coming forth. I see a lot of structure being built. And I think Santa Rosa is better for it. And I'm glad to be able to be a part of the organization that is moving these projects forward and making Santa Rosa and Sonoma County as a whole a better place to live. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Appreciate that very much. With that, we'll move on to item three, which is public comment and matters not listed on the agenda, but within the subject matter jurisdiction of the board. And I'll ask those here in attendance if anyone would like to speak to this body on anything. Now is that opportunity. Not seeing anyone stand up, I'll turn to Michelle and see if there's anyone online who would like to speak to this this body.
While I'm looking, I'll let you know that we didn't receive any comment on this item in advance of the meeting. Any members of the public attending by Zoom who would like to make public comment on items not listed on the agenda, please raise your hand at the bottom of the Zoom screen. And it doesn't look like we have anybody attending by phone, so we won't worry about that. I don't see any hands raised, Chair Rabbit.
All right, then we'll move on to the consent calendar. Two items today, the minutes of our February 6th board meeting and to approve the year-to-date financial report. And I'll look to my colleagues if there's any questions, comments, or concerns on the two consent calendar items.
No, but I would move the consent calendar.
Okay.
Second.
So we have a motion and second. Before we take a vote, I'll just ask once again if there's anyone from the public who'd like to speak on the consent calendar today. Seeing no one raise their hand here in the room, I'll ask Michelle if there's anyone online.
We didn't receive any public comment in advance on these items, and any members of the public attending by Zoom, please raise your hand at the bottom of the Zoom screen if you'd like to comment on the consent items.
Great. So we have a motion and a second on the approval of the consent calendar. Councilmember Alvarez, do you want to abstain on the first item, the minutes?
Yes, please. I would like to abstain on the first item. Thank you, sir.
Okay. So with that,
we can do a roll call.
Do a roll call.
All right. On item 4A, Councilmember Alvarez, we recorded an abstention for you. Supervisor Corsi?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fleming?
Yes.
Chair Rabbit?
Aye.
And on item 4B, the year-to-date financial report, Councilmember Alvarez?
Aye.
Supervisor Corsi?
Yes.
Councilman, or I'm sorry, Vice Chair Fleming?
Yes.
And Chair Rabbit?
Aye.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Moving on then to item number five. These are a couple of informational items. I think the first one is one that I think we're the main item of the day, apparently. But talking about the Enhanced Infrastructure Financing District, a process for formation. And Michelle, do you want to open it up or do we go straight to Raisa?
I'll give 10 seconds of background. This is something that the Board of Supervisors and City Council has been talking about even before the Renewal Enterprise District was formed and as part of the discussion around forming the Renewal Enterprise District. Wildfires, opening EOCs over and over, PSPSs, pandemic, a lot of things pushed this to the side, but the city has picked up the ball again. And they're here to tell us where they've gotten with this project. You might recall that back in, I think it was April 2020, the Renewal Enterprise District made a grant to the city to begin work on this, and the city's put more money into hiring consultants that are knowledgeable on the topic to bring this along to where we are today. I'm going to ask Raisa De La Rosa, who is City of Santa Rosa's Economic Development Division Director, I believe is your actual title. And I can load the slide deck. And if there's anybody else who's going to participate in this presentation, I can elevate them if they're attending via Zoom.
Yeah, it's David and Lenny and Bob should be on.
Okay. I'm going to elevate David, Lenny, and Bob.
I think those are the ones who are. Oh, and Dariel Dunstan might also be on.
Okay.
Can I see if I recognize anybody?
Oh, Courtney as well.
Alan.
Yeah, everything really.
Okay, I can assure you I will need the help of all the people on Zoom today. So just to introduce until the slides come up, we have Assistant City Manager Dunstan on. We have our consultants, our EIFD consultants from DTA, David Tausig Associates. We have our finance director, and Bob Gamble is our revenue consultant, our finance consultant, rather. And you can just go to the second slide. Well, so as Michelle said, that we have been talking about this for quite some time. It was actually before 2020 that we started making the rounds on the potential of an EIFD. As it was originally considered one of the economic recovery tools that we were considering post-Tubbs fire. But even before that, it was discussed when we were putting together the Housing Action Plan in 2016. We were able to hit a number of our objectives in the Housing Action Plan, and the subsequent activities that we did, really started pushing after the fire for economic recovery. And very specifically, when we created the Up Downtown program that looked to affect development opportunities and possibilities within our city, considering time, cost, and certainty, policies and initiatives that we were able to accomplish and we're starting to see the fruition of. What took a little bit longer is considering our financing tools. We obviously now have the Renewal Enterprise District, or we wouldn't be here today, and their housing fund, but we also have two qualified opportunity zones, a really great tool for developers, a number of other things, but EIFD remained on our docket for quite some time. We are starting to see the momentum of all of our efforts that we started way back again in 2016, but really went after in 2018, 2019. Next slide. So this is just a little bit of an overview. As you can see, this is our downtown station area specific plan, and we have quite a bit of momentum. I think there's not even everything on here that we've done, but we have, you can go to the next slide, actually. We have so many units under construction in the downtown. It felt like for the past 4 or 5 years, just a hurry up and wait kind of situation, but we have I think it's 419 units built, 131 units built since 2016, but we have 419 housing units that are under construction or near completion in the downtown area already. And then we have about 870 units that are coming down the pike. So momentum is happening. It is a long game-ish that we're talking about, but it's finally coming to fruition. If we can, you know, despite the state of the economy right now and fluctuations with banks, et cetera, we have quite a bit of momentum in the downtown. Next slide. So the point of an EIFD is to be able to capture the tax increments generated by the existing 1% ad valorem property tax. And because we have this momentum now, we are pursuing an enhanced infrastructure financing district because now is the time to do it before more units get built in order to best capture the tax increment, which is the graphic you see on the right. Time is of the essence. So again, as a reminder, an EIFD is a financing tool using tax increment revenues that are the same ad valorem property taxes already being paid by the property owner. So there are no new taxes and there are no additional property taxes imposed. An EIFD is basically a replacement to the old redevelopment district. However, unlike old redevelopment districts, there are no requirements for blight findings. Anything like that. Instead, these districts are set up to do is support sustainable growth. They have a little bit more flexibility than old redevelopment agency or project areas, and they are a platform for the types of policy integration that we are seeking to accomplish. You know, when we're talking about interconnected transportation, housing, mixed-use projects within areas of high opportunity, such as our downtown, and we have some other areas in the city as well. Next slide. So the main thing you need to know for now about forming a district is that it requires an action by city council because the district would be formed within the city's jurisdiction. So what the city would need to do is adopt a resolution of intention, which by law would include the approved boundaries and list of project improvements. At the same time, this would be the first action that that an elected body would take. At the same time they do this, they would also need to form a PFA, which is a... I just blanked on what that stands for. Public financing authority. So PFA. So the PFA can have, it needs to have five members on it. Typically we see a public financing authority with, two members from the elected body in which the district is formed. One from the county, assuming county participation, and two members from the public selected from within that district. We can go more than that. This is not typically what we see, but you get the idea. It could be 212, 223, something like that, right? We just need to have an odd number of people. The other thing that's important to note about the public financing authority is that once they are established, they are the ones that direct the direction of the district. So they would then say, yes, go forward and do an infrastructure financing plan. They are the ones that would be holding at least three public hearings and then informing what goes into the infrastructure financing plan. That infrastructure financing plan is, of course, our IFP, is the thing that sort of dictates or guides what the district would do over its lifespan. I also want to note that the PFA can pull the plug at any time. They are the deciding body. So there are off ramps built into the process. So not only do they inform it, but they can decide, no, you know, we're out as a body. They can decide not to pursue it. It is only after the public hearings and the fine tuning of that infrastructure financing plan that the public financing authority would then recommend to the Board of Supervisors and the City Council, should the county decide to participate, that they recommend the adoption of approval of the IFP. Next slide. So again, the PFA holds three public meetings. This is just a general overview of the timeline process. Those public hearings are 30 days apart, after which the Board of Supervisors and the county would each adopt a resolution approving the infrastructure financing plan. And I have to say, while it's possible for the city to pursue an EIFD on its own without the county, it's the county's participation, as you know, that would provide the most revenue or the value to the district. And so for this reason, it's imperative to us that the county participate and see value in the infrastructure financing plan. You can go to the next slide. So the IFP broadly outlines projects, but what that document also includes is the fiscal impact report. It is also imperative that the Public Financing Authority work through and assure that both parties, both participating jurisdictions, see value in both the projects as well as understanding the fiscal impact. So there is no election required unless 25% of the property owners within the district protest the formation. And I think that is done at the third public hearing. And then the pursuit of an EIFD is abandoned totally if 50% of the property owners protest the formation. So we would not move forward at that point at all. And again, I think it just says that it's the PFA that approves the infrastructure financing plan, et cetera. So next slide. Okay, so once the EFD is formed, the Public Financing Authority can make the decision to sell bonds, but only when there is a sufficient accrual of revenue to support the debt services. So again, we have our consultant, Bob Gamble, on the line. He is going to be way better able than I am to answer your questions. But essentially, the minimum debt service coverage is 125%, and the bonds cannot be sold until after some development has occurred and tax increment is generated. The point being is that the bonds are secured only by tax incremented generated within the district and not by city or county general funds. Next slide. So the investment program of an EIFD can target a whole range of physical improvements, such as what you see on this slide. It could be transportation, street improvements, parks and open space, pedestrian connectivity improvements, but also it can be affordable housing, childcare facilities, libraries, et cetera. We do have a number of plans that we can pull from: the Mendocino Avenue Corridor Plan, the Santa Rosa Avenue Corridor Plan. We've got pedestrian improvement project plans, as well as things identified in the Downtown Stationary Specific Plan. It is up to the Public Financing Authority to sort of understand and look to what they would want to include in the financing plan. Next slide. So this is a map of the proposed downtown EIFD boundaries if we decide to move forward with this. And given the high interest from, this is actually, I have to say, really has been expedited and pushed by our two downtown community benefit districts, the Railroad Square Association and the Downtown Action Organization. And with their assistance, we began talking about what the boundaries of an EIFD can look like. This incorporates, or I should say, it considers the Downtown Stationary Specific Plan. It also considers the Qualified Opportunity Zone districts, as well as the two community benefit district areas. It is a little bit more consolidated. And what we decided to do was to carve out areas that are already developed mostly with low-density residential development, simply because there would be very modest opportunity for growth there or none whatsoever. And so there is where you see the two historic districts carved out. Next slide. So these next three slides, I'm actually going to push through them to the last one. But what we did is we worked with the county assessor's office to what they did is they gave us three growth scenarios, a 2%, 3%, and 5% annual property tax growth assumption. So the first one is 2%, the next one is 3%, and let's land on the 5% slide. So this is, I just want to land here because it is the most aggressive growth assumption, and I think it's going to be helpful for us to just talk about it at that higher level. So first off, because we have pre-existing bond obligations related to the former downtown redevelopment project area, a good portion of any tax increment we may see between the formation of an EIFD, say now or next year, whenever it is, but ideally this year, until fiscal year 33-34, which is the dissolution year of that of the old redevelopment project area, most of the money from now until 2034 would go towards that obligation. That said, it is still helpful that we have a base year as soon as we can get it, ideally this year. So if we establish a district this fiscal year, we would not actually see revenue until 2034. And so what this slide shows is the tax assessor's assumptions based on this fiscal year is the base year less the ERAF factor. Okay, so they have provided us both the 30-year and 45-year term. We're most interested in looking at a 45-year term, the clock for which would not actually start ticking until bonds are issued. And looking at this, again, if we assume the highest level of commitment shown on this chart, a 45-year term at 75% participation rate, after 45 years, the outcome is about equals about $363,000 per year over the course of that time. Breaking that down, it's about $223,000 a year for the county portion of their participation, around $140,000 per year for the city. So that is a very quick, broad overview. And I am going to rely on our experts who are on the line for any questions that you have. And of course, we have folks from the Downtown Action Organization. Hugh Futrell represents both the Downtown Action Organization and Railroad Square Association. Director Hartman from Planning Economic Development. And we have Pauline and Cadence also from the Downtown Action Organization and Railroad Square Association. And again, folks from our consultant team, DTA, and Bob Gamble on the line. I'm done.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. And I'll turn to my colleagues to see if there's any questions of staff at this particular point in time. Director Fleming.
Thank you very much for that excellent presentation. There's many details that I think bear going over, but probably not at the expense of everyone's time here today. But one question I had is, how is property owner percentage determined? Is it based on the amount of frontage or the total amount of square feet? Or just is it every property owner counts as one regardless of size?
Right. It is just the ad valorem tax that it's just based on the property tax that they pay already. And it's the increment that we're looking at. So it doesn't change their property tax. David or Courtney or Bob, do you want to add anything to that? But you're muted.
Yeah. I think that's right. It's purely based on the property tax.
Okay.
Right. So any new development obviously is a big deal because you're getting a much larger jump in the assessed valuation. If there's turnover of property though, but hasn't sold in 10 years and now you sell it and it's 50% higher, then it's a 50% jump. So, and then there's the regular 2% every year, I think that we're all used to from Prop 13. So three Great. Sources.
Thank you. So my question was actually about the voting. And so for purposes of voting, how do you determine share of vote?
Right. So is it a weighted vote? And David, I would look to you.
Yeah, it's based on the assessed valuation. And we've never had 25% protests. That's a lot of folks protesting. But theoretically, if they did, then it would be a vote based on an assessed valuation.
Right. Which is why it might have been smart that you took out the, or that you were strategic in your formulation. We'll leave it at that. And and if you said never, but if you were to reach 50% protest, would it be a may or shall or can be dissolved? Can there be a campaign to continue or to try again at another point in time? Is that it?
I think it's a 1 year. You can't do it for another year, if I remember correctly. I'm not positive of that, but I think.
No, that's correct, David.
Okay, good. Thank you, Lenny.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Corsi.
So the boundaries have been chosen by us. Can they be expanded? And if there are boundaries beyond this, do they have to be contiguous with the boundaries that have been shown here?
So EIFD boundaries do not have to be contiguous. However, and then I'm going to let any one of our consultants respond further to that. But just by way of history, we did consider through the years the potential of both a downtown and a Roseland area EIFD. Why we decided first and foremost on going on the downtown is because we are more ready downtown, and for lack of a better word, more urgent, just based on the number of development that we're seeing in the downtown area. We decided to pursue the downtown first. There is an opportunity to do a second district in Roseland. We decided not to do them as one district, non-contiguous, again, just because one is just much more ready than the other. But as to whether you could add one or the value of adding something to existing one, pursuing something separately, I would leave that to our consultants to answer. David, do you have thought, like, can you expand the district at a later date once the boundaries are formed?
Yeah, they just changed the law and you can do that now. So yes.
Okay. So it's possible. Is it something that's advisable that we would have to see?
Yeah, and I am interested in Sebastopol Road and Roseland Village in particular, and just wondering, you know, what the process would be for adding that or creating another district down the road instead of doing it all in one fell swoop.
So again, just in talking with staff and understanding the timing and timeline of development in both opportunity areas, staff has been focused on doing them in two separate processes. We would simply follow the same process for that district. We would redo this process. And I think the benefit of keeping them separate is so that you can really, there's not competition for funds. You can really focus the funds and the needs of that specific area. They're both very different areas. They're culturally different, politically different. And it would give us that opportunity to focus more specifically on the needs of Roseland, should we choose to do that in the future as well. And I think Vice Chair Fleming, did you have a question specific to that?
Okay. Can I just ask one more on this? Would a second district require a separate public financing authority and the other things that you listed there?
David, would a second district?
Yeah, but you could use the same folks if you wanted to. So.
Okay. I'd be interested to hear more on not just the pros, but the cons of two districts.
Okay.
Vice Chair Fleming.
Thank you, Chair. Tagging along with that, the one question I had that I could see as being a potential drawback, because it wasn't lost on me that Sebastopol Road wasn't included, and I know that's a high priority for the council and probably the supervisors as well, is the ERAF, the debt? Mm-hmm. What?
ERAF?
Is that ERAF? Yeah. Okay. I don't know what that stands for, but the debt that we owe, right, on redevelopment, is that based on improvements that were made in the area? That would be, would it be unfair to burden Roseland with the developments that were previously executed within the former city limit boundaries?
Sure. So ERAF, it has to do with the education piece. I'm going to actually let one of the DTA folks or Bob talk about that more specifically. But the debt burden that we have is on the downtown. We did not have a redevelopment district in Roseland. So it could potentially delay the opportunities in Roseland until 2034, but it would, I mean, the revenue opportunities with it, even if we create the base year here. Was that your
question? Right, I'm trying to understand if there might be a detriment to rolling Roseland into a situation where they cannot benefit from the funding until 2034, whereas a separate formation might allow them to benefit much sooner, especially since they didn't get to benefit from any redevelopment funding.
Right, David, do you want to, or
Lynn? Yeah, she's right on. That's the issue. Yes, absolutely. They would not be, if there's no existing successor agency or redevelopment project area or old one in Roseland, then they would be unaffected by this. We could start collecting for them right away. Unfortunately, it appears like in the downtown area that I think it's 91% of our enhanced infrastructure financing district is already dedicated to the redevelopment agency for the next 10 years for bonds sold in 2015. So you're right, we would be tying up Roseland that way. So yes, also ERAF is completely different from redevelopment. ERAF, everybody's got to pay. It's money that goes to the state to backfill the school district. So we have similar school districts throughout the state. Beverly Hills doesn't get more money than Compton and that kind of thing. So that's what ERAF is. The regular property taxes go into the state, completely separate from the successor agency, which is in a situation you've got downtown in, I think it's called the Central Redevelopment Project Area, but not in your Rosewood one. So
thank you for such a detailed response. I now feel like I consider myself a municipal finance expert. I
mean, you are. Unfortunately, it's that quick. Yes.
All right. That's all I have for now. Thank you.
And I just want to add one more thing about Roseland. So in the downtown stationary specific plan, it does include Roberts Road. That was one of the areas we decided to pull out because we were anticipating the potential of a Roseland area EIFD in the future. And so we want to make sure that the development opportunities in that are consistent or are considered within a Roseland area redevelopment area or EIFD area. The other thing that I want to say about Roseland is that we are actively working on creating something similar to what the downtown has, which is a community benefit district or some kind of association, so that we have a solid group that can be representative of the area, and it makes for a smoother process of participation.
Director Alvarez.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate bringing up the concerns of Roseland and the cost of doing business in Roseland moving forward, especially when we look at the redevelopment fees and the comparison between downtown and Roseland as a whole. My question was for clarification more than anything. The agency, the body that determines what qualifies as a library, what qualifies as a park, what qualifies as an opportunity zone, who would that be?
It goes back to the Public Financing Authority. So they operate, and David, Courtney, Lenny, correct me if I'm wrong, they operate similarly to the old redevelopment agency, right? They oversee the projects that happen within
the
district.
Correct.
Thank you all. My question is a couple regarding the map. I'm curious because it seems like there's a sweet spot, right? You want to encompass all those areas that are going to be prime for development so that you can capture the tax increment. At the same time, if you make it so large, to me, it seems like you're diluting the money that you're obtaining for the infrastructure that's needed. And I want to make sure that the infrastructure improvements that are going to be within the mapped area is going to continue to spur new investment to help generate those dollars, as opposed to, quite honestly, paying for deferred maintenance that should have been done by some other funding source. Can you talk about how you actually define that? And I think it goes to the question about how far out we go, because I would imagine, you know, hey, even if you went the full 6 million or whatever it was per year, if you cover the entire, you know, I'm exaggerating, but if you cover the entire city, it's not going to get you a lot of improvements as much as you might think.
That's right. So there are two things that come to mind when I'm hearing you ask that question. And one of them is we are very aware of how counties viewed redevelopment districts. And
our county was different.
Your county was different, but we understand definitely what you would be considering on the financial or fiscal impacts to your county, right? This is more beneficial than what the redevelopment agencies were. There's, levels of participation that you can decide on. But we also were very aware of overreach as well, of saying, look, because there are some places in redevelopment, they were like, the whole city is blighted and we're going to do the whole thing. So we were building off of lessons learned from redevelopment, which is what this entire program is, right? EFDs. But secondly, you're right. I mean, we were intentional in thinking about the boundaries based off of the greatest amount of opportunity. So whether it's vacant land or needs or, density infill development, which is really what we're interested in, very similar to the tools that this board is looking at, that's where the intentionality of the district comes. And so you start going out, then we're looking at really sort of more suburban building and less likelihood of density infill development of the kind that we think will have a longer sustainable financial impact to the region, not just to us, to the region. So if you recall, when we were even considering the idea of a renewal enterprise district, before we had the fancy name of RED, this was the objective of part of our long-term economic recovery and our ability to weather stresses and shocks of the kinds of things that we saw in 2017 and over the last couple of years. It's a flexibility or the variety of housing availability. I say this, it's been years since they've done it, but I had received in the past calls from Petaluma saying if the city of Santa Rosa does not increase their housing stock, we cannot increase the number of people who we employ. They're coming from too far. So we understood and understand to this day that we have the best ability to affect the region's housing in a way that that considers our urban growth boundaries, density infill development. This tool supports that. It is not an adequate tool when you start going away from opportunity areas like downtown and like Roseland. Hopefully in the future, we'll have other opportunity areas in that way, but it's really geared toward that density infill, those reuse kinds of opportunities. So hopefully that answered your question.
No, I think it adds that. I'm sorry, Michelle, go ahead.
Through the chair, if I can just add one more thing that hasn't come up yet. And that's that Santa Rosa and the county, I believe, and the rest of the cities in the county are pursuing pro-housing designations, which you achieve a score depending on how many menu items you have that are considered pro-housing. And an EIFD is considered one of those menu items that will add to our pro-housing designation score and our ability to achieve pro-housing designation at all. And when HCD has two applications in front of them and the scores are similar, this could be the difference between winning application and an application that isn't funded.
I appreciate that very much. Can you talk real briefly about, have we priced the needed infrastructure improvements within the mapped area, and is it consistent throughout? Because I also know from my experience in redevelopment that you have this wonderful mapped area that some areas of that not have at all the utility to a level of any development could take place. So and another area might have everything in place to move forward. Because I think it goes to setting expectations and then delivering. You mentioned Petaluma. Petaluma can't do anything downtown unless they replace the entire fire main, right? Which everyone thought was already under the ground. What it was inadequate. So things like that, I just kind of worry about the expectations that are set and what we can actually deliver.
Sure.
How much do we know at this particular point in time?
I am going to refer to somebody from the consulting team, perhaps Courtney, Lenny, or David. But I will say we are supposed to have been built out to our general plan. I believe that our trunk lines are in place. So from an infrastructure there, it's not that additional things aren't needed, but to a certain degree, and we'll have to review this, we should be built out or anticipated built out to our general plan. And do one of you from DTA want to take the rest of the question on the methodology?
Sure. Although maybe Bob, you want to answer this too. I'm just, we have, this is a financing mechanism. It's going to generate some money, although it looks like the first money you're going to be getting is going to be 10 years from now, which, you know, assuming the successor agency is using most of the money right now. So that's how long it's going to take. We build whatever it is that the Public Finance Authority wants to move ahead with. We can have a very specific list, or it can be a more generic list of what we're going to be doing with the money. But whether or not it provides all parts of the downtown with improvements, A, I don't think we're going to have enough money to do that. And B, I guess if there are some basic improvements that you need in some area, then you could use that to push that area up and not go to the areas that already have sufficient infrastructure. You've got an option, but it's a very flexible tool. It's any public improvement with a useful life of 15 years or more. So you can imagine it can be anything. And it's really a matter of political will as to how you use the money. And it can go into the most rundown part of the downtown, or it can go for some major arterial that everybody's gonna use, or something else. I don't know, Bob, if you had any other comments besides that.
No, I think that's fair, David.
Thank you. And then I guess lastly, it's something I probably need to talk to our assessor about regarding is there a chart of the normal tax increment growth that would take place, acknowledging the lack of the incentive that the EIFD would bring forward? Because the truth of the matter is that it's true of every arm of government. We spend every dollar that we collect, no matter what. So if we're foregoing, and I know it's the increment of the growth, but there's certainly has been an increment of growth over the course of years. And does that get calculated into the base number that was mentioned earlier? Or is that where we come into the percentages of what the agreement would be?
Bob or David, do you want to answer that one?
Well, I don't totally understand the question, but the base year is whatever it is the year we set the base, and anything that's been done beforehand is included in that base. So we don't get increment out of that. We only get increment of what happens in the future. And I'll be honest, we do some cities that want to do affordable housing with this money. I don't know if that's an economic driver. It certainly provides housing for persons who work in the community. So in that way, it is indirectly. So that's one thing. Or you can use it for some crucial pieces of infrastructure that opens up the area. We just did Temecula Wine Country. They very foolishly want to compete with you guys in Napa in the wine industry. It's kind of laughable, but anyway, that's what they want to do. And we didn't discourage them, but what they're doing is they're actually setting up this public-friendly, tourist-friendly series of roads with what do you call them, roundabouts and scenery and, you know, nice landscaping and all that stuff. And they feel that is going to create economic growth in that area. So that's why they picked that particular type of infrastructure. You have a choice as to what you're going to do that will give you the most bang for your buck. And that would be up to you to figure out what it would be. It's an open book there, but that's what the financing could be used for. But yes, you could take that increment, use it for something, and it doesn't stimulate growth because you use it for a particular improvement or a type of maybe affordable housing or something that doesn't directly, you know, bring more tourists in and that sort of thing. So it gives you enough rope to hang yourself with, I guess, is what it boils down to, but enough to also do some good stuff.
Were you going to add something?
Yeah, as I heard the question, I think part of it was around the issue of how much or what percentage of the tax increment growth that is contributed. And there are legitimate questions, I think, from the county's perspective around how much may need to be retained for for, you know, its own organic growth needs and to cover costs, increases in costs going forward. So that's part of what gets worked out in the course of the development of the infrastructure financing plan, which David and company will be developing in the coming months.
I think the other thing that I have barely a grasp on, but look to Bob and DTA on, is, you know, this is, my understanding is that it come the dissolution of the redevelopment district that currently exists. So 2034, you would have less of a commitment through an EIFD than you currently have through that old redevelopment district. So it is a percent of 30% of the 1%, you know what I mean? So it is less than your current commitment as it stands, if that gives you any sense of ease.
No, I appreciate that. I look forward to seeing the numbers, because again, it goes to, I think, is it Robert that answered the,
yes,
about the percentage.
Right.
That's out there.
Right. So and there, I believe that the fiscal impact is part of the IFP that you would be looking at. So you can start digging into it at that point. And our consultants will be available to that board the whole time.
Great. Director Corsi.
I just want to follow up on that a little bit, make sure I understand. You know, the kind of rudimentary spreadsheets up there raised a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. What I was seeing at 25, 50, and 75%, those are basically choices that one of those is a choice that the jurisdiction has to make, whether it's the city or the county, how much, what percentage of the increment we're willing to contribute to the process.
That's correct. You can do, I mean, we took those as examples. You know, it could be 35, it could be 45. It is whatever you choose. So again, that is exactly right.
Okay. This is a question for you because it was before my time, but did we have a Roseland or Sebastopol Road redevelopment district?
Yeah.
And do we have remaining debt from that?
Sure we do.
Yeah.
Sure we do. We had three redevelopment districts, the Springs, Roseland, and
Arcadia.
Well, that was, I think ours was, I think we had the up the river, the three counties, oh, yeah. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So that's something that we need to add as well. That's the only questions I had. Thanks.
Sure, Vice Chair.
Last question, hopefully, on this, which is going back to what Chair Rabbit was asking about in terms of how this might adversely impact county ability to provide, you know, maintenance and address increased demands on their services. Would there be an analysis somewhat akin to what we've seen in Urban 3 or something like that that might help us to inform what's appropriate in terms of a split? And what investments might yield the best value for both agencies?
We are in the process of doing something a little bit more robust and specific than what Urban 3 provided us. And the whole idea about Urban 3, if anybody doesn't know, is the more intense the land use is, the greater return it is, not just on property taxes, but on all other sources of revenue. And there will be some of that seen in the fiscal impact report, but ideally we'll have additional information, like we're doing a housing analysis, economic and fiscal impact of housing in the downtown area. We're doing that analysis right now that could hopefully support whatever the infrastructure finance plan is that would get you some of that information that you're looking for. I don't know that fiscal impact report or the infrastructure finance plan will be that detailed, but we can get you some of the information, we believe, by the time it comes out.
It sounds like the auditor also might be a good source of information. I think that any information that we can have that will lead to everybody feeling like it was a win-win is going to be the North Star here. So.
Right. We do anticipate, I mean, the property tax is the biggest piece of revenue, right? That goes into this or the loss of revenue potentially based on that tax increment. But this should spur additional economic development and economic growth. And so you should see an offset in other areas. And so we hope to be able to show what that is to the best of our ability.
Excellent. Thank you.
No more questions. I'll turn to Michelle and ask if there's anyone here who'd like to speak on this particular item. Now is the time. This is an informational item. Very much appreciate the information for all of you being present and the answers as well.
Chair Rabbit, and I believe we do have members of the public that would like to speak. And there are microphones that you can see over in the cabinet there. I'm going to put up a timer slide. Chair Rabbit and board, we didn't receive any public comment in advance other than the written public comment that you have in front of you. Nothing recorded. Let me find our timer slide.
Do we have anyone participating from the public on Zoom?
We have one member of the public participating on Zoom. I'm going to time you here if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Hugh.
For having this meeting, we appreciate it. Hugh Futrell, chair of the Downtown Action Organization, here with Cadence Hinkle, who is the executive director of the DAO, Pauline Cook, who is the vice chair of the DAO and also a member of the Railroad Square Association Board. I was also the vice chair of the Railroad Square Association Board. As you know, there's two business improvement districts, Railroad Square, downtown, both unanimously support the creation of an EIFD. It's about 250 property owners that we represent, and a little bit less directly, but very importantly, maybe somewhere between 500 and 700 businesses altogether. Just a couple of very, very quick comments. One is that the original discussions of the EIFD are actually now about 8 years old. So we're getting to a very important place now, and we're very, very encouraged. Secondly, the whole issue of the bounded indebtedness of the successor agency is an interesting, complicated, and technical question. Speaking as a former public finance guy, my personal opinion is that these dollars, in fact, are not delayed for 10 years. But we have not had the opportunity to have direct conversations with the technical consultants on this point to clarify that, and we hope to have those conversations. A third issue is the overall economic development in terms of the finances for the different groups. Now, of course, property taxes increment would be diverted, but there are other sources of income. As cities downtown generates more employment, more retail sales, more interest over time, that has a radiating effect on the economics in other ways too. Sales tax, for example. Hotel transit occupancy tax, which in a form, the county receives some of those dollars through the Sonoma County Tourism Improvement District. Very substantial dollars, as a matter of fact, which grow. And I believe, Chairperson Rabbit, that currently the county actually supplements the tourism with some general fund money. Well, this is a way to slowly reduce the general fund allocation through the back door. So major, major potential economic impacts. The critical thing, though, to emphasize is that if city-centered growth matters, and we all know it does, for social reasons, for climate change reasons, for economic reasons, for inclusion reasons, for a diversity of housing, the EIFD is the critical tool that the legislature has provided counties and cities to obtain those objectives. And I would encourage, we would encourage, the whole business community downtown would encourage, looking at the horizon of the totality of the issue in that sense. Economics, yes. City-centered growth, yes. Inclusion, yes. And a sense of urgency and focus, for sure. Thank you.
I don't know how you did that, but it was exactly 3 minutes.
I don't want to take up, I don't feel like I have to stand. I don't want to take up too much more time. Hugh kind of made all the points that I was going to make. I'm Cadence Hinkle Allenson, also with the Downtown Action Organization. We've been talking a lot with Railroad Square about this. There's a lot of excitement from all of the property owners within the downtown. Obviously, we're starting to see some real momentum in the developments downtown, and Both of our organizations, all of our property owners want to be supportive as possible. So we really appreciate Michelle and Red today for taking the time to learn more about this. And we look forward to continuing to, and Raisa for your presentation. We could look forward to continuing to be part of the conversation and supporting in any way that we can.
Thank you very much. Anyone public member like to speak?
Who's on? Any member of the public who would like to speak on Zoom, please raise your hand at the bottom of the screen. No hands raised.
So this was down as an informational item. Very much appreciate the information. Is there a direction that you need from this body to take a next step?
It was simply to provide an update on where the city has gotten with this, to give you a sense of what actions you might see coming up in the future, give you a sense of the urgency and the possible timeline. I think we're all seeing the activity in downtown, and certainly Roseland, if we're going to look at another EIFD in the future. So there is a sense of urgency because you want to capture that increment before the properties hit the tax rolls.
If I can, ask the one question just to make sure that I'm clear. So even though there's 10 years left on the successor agency indebtedness on the redevelopment side of things, it doesn't mean that that you start today at the base level, that future years or the financing institutions going to limit how far out you can go to bond against future revenue within that area? Is that the question at play?
Bob, is that a question?
If that can be restated a little bit, I'm not sure I quite.
Not sure if I could do that. So in the redevelopment area, are we precluded from bonding against that because there's 10 years left before we reach, call it an area of positive return for the EIFD?
You know what, Bob, I think I know part of it and then you can take it. So even if we were able to have that tax increment starting now, it takes about 5, 6, 7 years in order to gain enough revenue within it. So yes, it is, you know, a little bit on when we can gain the revenue needed to bond against. Is that?
Yeah, that's my view of it. I'm not an expert on the impact of the redevelopment area. You know, from my perspective, there are existing obligations, including bonds that have to be paid off. That, as I understand it, that payment continues on through 32 or 33. There has to be coverage above that. I think the bigger factor is what Raisa just noted. That is that there has to be new development. There has to be new development that comes on the tax rolls, and there has to be enough of it that there's adequate revenue stream to support bonds.
But by establishing the district this year, we get to go back to this base year in which we understand what that is when we are able to access it.
And the other important thing is the 45-year clock starts upon bond sale. So we don't sell bonds for 10 years. We now have a 55-year district. So you actually will get it back on the back end. So it's not that bad. We would have had to wait 5 years probably to get increment enough to sell bonds anyway. Now we have to wait 10 years, which is a lot longer, but not 10 years longer. It's about 5 years longer.
So, but you're still starting the base level when established.
Very much so. Very much so.
But as soon as that RDA has been repaid, then we're able to sell bonds at that point in time. So we, as of right now, are factoring in the 10-year and would be able to sell bonds probably right away because of the increment that had been collected.
Making assumptions, by the way, that we don't have access to that. I don't think we do, but we have not talked directly to the successor agency to figure that out. So.
I think it's also a subject for our bond council to weigh in on as well, David. So I think that needs to happen.
I get that. Thank you. I'll look to my colleagues for any final statements. And Director Corsi.
Just wondering if the city council has taken any action or given direction on this.
No, not at this point. We are scheduled to, or we're seeking to place this item on the agenda for April 25th. And the action at that point would be simply a resolution of intention, which obligates no one to anything, and the formation of a public financing authority, which we would like to actually Assistant City Manager Dunstan might have more information on this. I know he's been talking with the county administrator, but we would need to coordinate our efforts with the county, even on that action, so that there are no surprises.
And I did want to say that at some point we'll be asked to take some action on this at the Board of Supervisors level. And the county administrator has been talking with the city manager's office about a subject. Yeah.
Please.
Would supplement that answer with saying that during our goal setting, it was noted as a priority, which is why it's going forward. So there is political willingness to consider this in spite of the action not yet having been taken. So I have reason to believe that it's a hopeful situation.
Please.
Just want to make our start reiterate, but acknowledge the point that the health of our downtown corridor is to the entire health of the city of Santa Rosa. And as resident of Roseland, I do understand that very clearly. But I do hope that in the future, Roseland does have an opportunity to join and to an opportunity to invest in itself at the same rate that our downtown corridor does. Thank you.
I would just like to say I'm excited about this. I think the EIFD is right up Red's alley in terms of a tool. We've talked about many tools that we could use to offer to spur the type of development I think we'd all like to see in the city-centered growth, and great statements there, Hugh, on all the reasons why. Of course, for me, I always look at the, you know, is that map exactly where it should be? Is there costs within that map? I would always want us to be, whatever the investments were out of the EIFD, to really be always trying to capture additional increment and growth and not have it, you know, I was around for a lot of redevelopment and there were some head scratchers about the investments made. And I think that hopefully we'll learn those lessons going forward and really kind of concentrate and not just have it supplement. Or supplant, I should say, a funding source, but really make sure that it's there to and what the city leaders want to see in the downtown. And I think it's a great tool in that direction, in that vein. Always forward to seeing the numbers and kind of the particulars. And, you know, as we talked about the other day, we have our costs go up CPI plus 2 or 3. So, you know, when CI is at 6.75%, that's 10%. It's nothing to laugh at, and it's trying to figure that out going forward. So thank you. Thank you all for that. Appreciate it. We'll move to the Red Housing Fund lending activity, the project status, and this is back to Michelle.
This will be a lot of fun. There's been a lot
thank
of
you progress. All.
And at this point, I will be the presenter and the administrator and the Zoom administrator. So see how smoothly this goes to my slides. Amazingly, I'm on the right slide. I don't think I need my notes for this. So the Red Housing Fund, as you all know, was formed with lending capital that originated with the city and the county's PG&E settlements. We had great support from MTC, and we have a couple of MTC commissioners here, Kaiser Community Foundation, Sonoma County, and others that accelerated the launch of the Red Housing Fund. We moved with a sense of urgency given the effects of the housing crisis, and got a NOFA out within a month of receiving the original seed capital. We had funding recommendations within a couple of months after the application deadline. And we started underwriting and closing loans at just as fast as the developers would go. So the good news is that there are 4 projects that are in various phases of construction. Various phases of vertical construction, actually, 420 Mendocino, we'll see, and you've probably all seen, is in demolition, but they expect vertical construction to start really soon. So 213 units, affordable units, and 282 market rate for middle-income households are currently under construction. One project is underwriting now, and we should see that close escrow in the next week or so. And that's 62 more units of affordable housing. And what's unique about that one is that it goes down to 15% of AMI at its very, very lowest income bracket. And that's for people exiting houselessness. That should break ground this spring. And then a sixth project, which is Tierra de Rosas, is expected to break ground later this year, and that's an additional 75 units of affordable housing. We think we'll see 300 units that were spurred to vertical construction by the Red Housing Fund ready for occupancy by the end of this year. And more next year. And as you all know, repaid loans will recycle back to the fund and be lent out again to future projects. We're actively working to raise more lending capital. So far, we've raised an additional $1 million for a total of $21 million in lending capital. So this is Aviara. Anybody who's driven down West College lately has probably seen it. It's right next to Safeway on West College, 136 units. In 6 3-story buildings. They're all 2 and 3 bedrooms, so they're appropriate in size for families that earn between 30 and 60% of the area median income. There's going to be a community room, a playground, and a picnic area. And it also has 10 hours per week of services like after-school tutoring, ESL, job counseling, and financial literacy. This project is just breaking all records and how quickly it's going up. And the Red Housing Fund does now have a sign on the chain link fence indicating that it did provide financing for this project. ACME is another project that is now framing. It's 77 units in 3-story buildings, 1 to 3 bedrooms, so appropriate for single person households on up to families earning between 30 and 60% of area median income. It received some of the 9% low income housing tax credits that council member or vice chair Fleming helped us fight for. And it also has some after-school programming and adult education. And one really cool thing that just recently happened is the developer has decided to rename the project and has coordinated with Roseland University Prep and Elsie Allen to have a contest for the students to rename it. So I think it's going to be a lot cooler to have the students name it than have it named after an auto wrecking yard. Lofts is 114 units in buildings that are 3 to 5 stories in 3 phases. Housing funds loan is secured by all 3 phases because it's all one parcel. It has, this is phase 3 that is about to break ground. They're doing site work now. And it'll have, it'll share amenities with the other phases, including a rec room, barbecue, pool, and playground. It just has 2 80% AMI units. And what's really cool about this one is that there are a lot of people who apply to be in affordable housing, but they earn just a little too much to qualify for affordable housing. And these are households that are extremely cost burdened. These 3 phases are affordable by design, and they are at that income level between 80 and 120% of AMI, where they have a hard time qualifying ordinarily for or paying for market rate housing, but earn a little too much for affordable. So that's a pretty cool project for that reason. This project is getting a lot of attention because there's demolition going downtown. This is our largest project, 420 Mendocino. It's 168 units in an 8-story building, 5 stories wood frame over 3-story concrete podium. It has some commercial space on the ground floor and will include a fitness center, a co-working lounge, and a rooftop deck. These also are affordable by design, so it's pretty fancy building, but these are not, you know, high-end luxury rentals. they will be affordable to our professional workforce. So a lot of activity going on downtown at that location. South Park Commons is the project that we expect to close escrow in the next week or two. And that's at the old Bennett Valley Senior site on Bennett Valley Road. And I know when we began to talk about these projects, there was some concern about the project being named Bennett Valley Apartments, which was its working name originally. They went back to the community and the community decided we want to name this South Park Commons. So I know that was a sensitivity for a couple of the board members here. It's studios to three bedrooms. Like I said earlier, some of the units are appropriate for people exiting houselessness at below 20% AMI. City of Santa Rosa put some of its project-based vouchers into it. It's redevelopment because the dilapidated, at the time, senior center was there, although the senior center I know meant a lot to a lot of different people, but I think this is a great way to carry on the spirit of what the senior center, the kinds of services that the senior center was providing. That could probably be arranged. And then finally, Casa Roseland, we're all wanting to push this one across the finish line. It's been a difficult project to get fully financed. It's still competing for low-income housing tax credits. Hopefully they have a good shot in this next round. It should be in the next month, I believe. And as soon as they've got their tax credit commitment, we're ready to underwrite their loan and get this one under construction too. So really exciting, 30 to 60% of AMI. It's a beautiful, beautiful building. Councilmember Alvarez, this will really be a nice looking development for Roseland on a parcel that will have other amenities as well. And I think you're aware of that. So I wanted to show you a map to give you a sense of where all of these projects are in proximity to one another. They're all city centered, they're all transit oriented, they're close to amenities. We are not putting any affordable housing in food deserts, for example. So it's a really exciting slate of projects, and there, like I said, money comes back to the fund and we can loan it out again in the future. So thanks to City of Santa Rosa and the County of Sonoma for trusting us with this lending capital. I should acknowledge that Supervisor Corsi and Vice Chair Fleming are advisory members to the Red Housing Fund Board, and pleasure to work with them. And it's been a pleasure to work with the project sponsors and developers as well.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Those are great numbers, and it's really great to see that all the buildings going up or getting vertical, as you say. So I appreciate that. Anyone have anything for Michelle on this one?
A comment that I love to boast that three of the developments are in my district one. But the reality is that without the efforts of me, along with the community. So I definitely want to say thank you for the efforts that's been put forth. And hopefully now myself being on the board as well, I want to learn and I want to continue the efforts that you pushed forward. So thank you for what you've done. Thank you for what you've done. And thank you for what you've done.
They deserve the credit. They stuck their political necks out, and that can be scary, but I think it was worth it.
Anyone online?
We do have a member of the public online. If you would like to make any public comments, please raise your hand. Hands raised. Chair Rabbit, we didn't get any comment in advance on this item.
Okay, great.
Please,
yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Eddie. Want to something that Councilman Alvarez said earlier about, you know, the importance of this work for the city. I think that you got to say it wider than that this is important for the whole county. We saw the property tax increments up there to the city. Greater share of it goes to the county than goes to the city. It's good for all of us. And it's not just for revenues. It's places for people to live. And that's constantly coming up as the biggest problem in so many things that we do. So great that, you know, we're sitting here talking about 600 plus units coming out of the little old red housing fund. It's great.
One thing that I didn't talk about was the economic impact of these developments. It's about $400 million in total project costs that we've spurred to construction with our little $21 million. And then there's ordinarily a 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, sometimes even a 7 multiplier on that economic development. So it's really a shot in the arm for the city and the county in terms of economic development. And, you know, kind of another unsung hero of all of this is the planning and economic development people. They in Santa Rosa, they have been understaffed for years. And meanwhile, my developers are telling me, and you probably read in the paper for the 420 Mendocino article, that the developers said the city's been great to work with. So hats off to those folks too. They're not in the room to get any credit, but they're part of all the moving parts.
I'm thinking back. I think the housing units downtown in Santa Rosa will be such a godsend for the entire county, but really for the city. And thinking back, when I moved to Petaluma, there were probably 50 dwelling units in the downtown core. Most of them were above stores. Most of them were pretty decrepit, and no one lived down there by choice. Of course, at that time, there was probably one restaurant that you'd want to go to. There weren't really a lot of options. Granted, it was the timing 35 years ago of the downtown kind of not being the town center, but shifting, trying to find its way. But I do think that the amount of units that are downtown has benefited Petaluma tremendously. And I see the same opportunity here. Because I see a lot of, quite honestly, there's some buildings that you just walk by. There's no openings within those buildings. There's no interaction at the street level, but there's no one living upstairs, filling the streets, going to bars and restaurants and everything else. So I still think that, you know, getting housing downtown here in Santa Rosa would really spur the entire area, the city in that same vein. And having a good mix of types of units so that people can go out and really truly spend dollars, attract the types of businesses that will benefit from that is a great thing. And I've seen it in Petaluma. Now at the same time, Petaluma's rent prices are about $300 a month more for a typical two bedroom than up this way. So it also, you know, it's a constant battle of trying to stay ahead of the curve at the same time, keep pushing for that better type of environment. So thank you for all the work. That's a great start, 300 units on at the end of the year.
We're off races. And I'll also add that downtown Santa Rosa is going to have a really good mix of affordable and market rate. The Cannery is all affordable. Caritas 1 and 2 are affordable. So I think we're going to see something for everybody downtown.
Perfect. Shall we move on then to our item 6, which is an action item today? It's the RED fiscal year 22-23 budget. This is going to be our review and consider the approval of the fiscal year 23-24 preliminary budget. I'm sorry, did you have something you want to add?
Not on the last item. I had a gentle reminder of time and see if you wanted to. I've got 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
This budget is really a review of what we went through in February, so I think it'll go really fast. So
I just wanted to know if you wanted to reorder those things or if you...
What's your preference?
Well, budget's really important. I think the closed session items is perhaps pretty important.
What can you do, Michelle?
I think we can get through this budget in 5 minutes.
Okay.
If there aren't a lot of questions.
And 15 is enough in there?
Definitely.
Okay, go.
All right. I'll need some notes for my budget here. So every April, we look at a preliminary budget for the next fiscal year, and that satisfies the requirement in our bylaws that we have a budget by the within 60 days of the end of our fiscal year. I think
most of you could probably recite this by heart, but our operating costs have been paid for primarily through a grant from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. We raised an additional $1.3 million, which is went to designing and launching and now operating the Renewal Enterprise District. The Renewal Enterprise District is already paying its own bills. So some of that $1.3 million is going to be used as a matching, a match for a grant that we're applying for in a few weeks. Looking back over our short history, we are operating or our expenditures in fiscal year 2020, 2021 were $341,000, almost $875,000 in 21-22, and are estimated to be $844,000 at the end of this fiscal year. And all of those budgets contained a lot of expenditures to design, launch, and operate the RED Housing Fund. What things I can skip. Oh, in February, your board recommended building a budget that includes and depends on member assessments of $50,000 per member for a total of $100,000 to fund both baseline and enhanced services or programming for the RED Housing Fund, including all of our obligated activities, but also in terms of enhanced programming, trying to get a joint city-county housing meeting, continuing with the collaborative grant seeking that's been so rewarding, monitoring, participating, and reporting on BAFA, the Bay Area Housing Finance Authority, and advancing the analysis and possible deployment of enhanced or essential function bonds to protect and produce affordable housing. Burbank Housing is working on an MOU that we might look at in the future between the RED and Burbank to maybe do a pilot as a start. So really briefly, the remaining balance of the less restrictive Hewlett Foundation grant, as well as more restrictive revenue, will carry over to next year's budget. Our fiscal year 23-24 fund balance is estimated to be $229,000 and change. Of that total, $100,000 is being reserved from the Kaiser Permanente grant, really to compensate ourselves for the administrative services that we're paying to, that the RED Housing Fund is paying to us. Our fund balance, that'll be about $129,000 plus projected revenue of $302,500, makes a total of $432,000 available to budget for RED operations and programming. And the way the Auditor Controller's Office accounts for grants makes the budget numbers look higher. Makes our revenue look higher. It makes our costs look higher. But most of that is that we're paying ourselves from the Kaiser grant for the administrative services that we're providing to the RED Housing Fund. So the amount of money we're actually spending and the revenue, you can sort of think of as about $100,000 less in each case, not as intuitive as it could be. We won't know our funding options. We've reviewed them a lot of times. And now we'll just look at our budget, the preliminary budget, and you will come back with a final budget once the fiscal year end closes. Our spending is estimated to total, yes. Yes, the Wizard of Oz got out of sync there.
One more.
I think I see that well enough. No,
it's
okay.
It's fine.
Okay. So let's see, the 2023-24 spending will total $417,100, including tapping the Kaiser grant to compensate ourselves for the administrative support to the RED Housing Fund. Expenditures, like I said, would be $317,000 and change net of the Kaiser grant. We're a contract agency, so our largest expenses are associated with consulting services, including executive director, general counsel, auditor, accounting, strategic planning, and grant writing technical assistance. And that totals $308,000 in this budget. Administrative services and supplies are $9,100.
and rents are 100,000. So that wraps up the budget. I could put up the Excel spreadsheet if you really can't see that. It has the same numbers, but just in a spreadsheet where we could maybe zoom in a little tighter if we wanted to.
You're good with the budget that we discussed previously. And so the question today will be a vote to advance this and to come back for final approval.
You would be giving final approval on the preliminary budget, which is the way the county does it.
Also. Okay.
You have a budget before your fiscal year end close. You don't have your final numbers till the fiscal year end does close.
Gotcha.
So you do a preliminary today, and that's our budget. And then I come back in August once we've closed the fiscal year end and said, and I say, here's our really the final. And then we could have budget adjustments. And we have had at least one this year and at least one or two last year. As
all right.
needed.
Any questions on what we've seen thus far? Can I get a motion to approve?
We didn't receive anything in advance. Any members of the public wishing to comment, please raise your hand at the bottom of the Zoom screen. None?
So we have a motion and a second. Do you want to do a roll call? You want to make it official?
Council Member Alvarez? Supervisor Corsi?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fleming?
Yes.
And Chair Rabbit.
Aye.
Think that passes with unanimous vote. And at this point, we are going to go into closed session, but I recommend that we invite public comment on closed session and then close the meeting. And we'll do the report out at the next meeting, if that's okay with you,
Chair Rabbit. That would be ideal. So anyone from the public who'd like to speak to this body on the closed session?
Public wishing to speak on closed session, please raise your hand at the bottom of the Zoom screen. And, go ahead and adjourn, and I will stop the Zoom. We'll stop the.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.